look down over a world not quite like our own. We find ourselves on the edge of a bay in the lowlands, bordered by a great geological rift to the north and bounded by a desert and a burgeoning empire to the east. We find ourselves now just inside that empire, at the very tentative edges of its reach. To our south is that desert, a place where no one but raiding barbarians live. To our east is the empire proper, where more civilized raiding barbarians live. And to our north, hunched in shadow, is the Darakion Forest. Let's look away from that place. It is ill-fated. Let us also let our gaze skip lightly over the palisades of Aster. Once a village, now a barracks and a brief staging post in the trade of human toil and misery. Let us look away from the blood-soaked sands of their ramshackle arena to a happier place of entertainment. Bright striped cloth and whistling music entice the soldiers to spend their pay visiting the sideshows and purchasing tickets for the great big top performance at Banjax's unbelievable gear chain circus, showcasing the wonders of the modern age along with the beauty of an age still fading. And around a little stove, sitting on bog chairs and benches, we find four friends. So, who would like to introduce their character to the audience?
Tivolo is a fly kindan, and like all his kindan, he is diminutive. 3'8", maybe 3'9" in his boots. He has a dark, rich tan skin, fading to bruised purple over his bones. And to most people of other kindan, he's a little ill-favoured. His brow ridge is prominent, and so are his cheekbones, which gives his eyes a very sunken look. He's humming quietly to himself, but to those who know him this morning, this is less his normal cheer and more an attempt to communicate his normal cheer.
Lorca is tall, taller than any reasonable man might be, and as thin as a yardstick. He stands impeccably straight and poised, with sharp features, curly blonde hair slicked back from a high hairline, and light grey skin. While often vague about his heritage, the white bands on his forehead and hands testify that he is Woodlouse Kindan, though any well-travelled fellow might suspect there may be something about him undeniably half-bred, perhaps mantis or grasshopper. He stands, speaks in a very civilized, proper way, slightly aloof and snide, but never meaningfully so.
Well, Elegant Scale is Butterfly Kindan. He's got the blank white eyes and iridescent skin that all of his kind have. And he is currently drumming his fingers on the table as he soaks in the sunlight, as he mulls over what to do about the moon to his son that he has had an altercation with.
Vesperia of House Tesaro, or Vess for short, is a tall, slender, elegant spider kindan. Draped in silk and impeccably poised, they have an air of nobility, but reject the principles of their family. They are the costumer, and that is apparent in the way that they dress. They are dressed extravagantly, but extravagantly in, like, the elegant way more so than the performer way.
You're currently outside of Aster. Aster used to just be some farming village out in Beetle Country, notionally like Helleron's zone of control, but you know, effectively just a outlying minor village. Until the Wasps marched in, the burgeoning Empire of the Wasps, and took it over and converted it into a military outpost. Your circus has stopped here because soldiers are good business. And while you don't often travel deep into the Wasp Empire, it's a little risky, it's a little tricky, you know? It just invites a bit too much trouble. Aster is a good sort of triangulation point, so you can then go down the edge of the Dryclaw to Tark without having to go over the same place twice in the circuit. However, it does mean being near the Darrakion. Three of you are inept. Three of you are inept. Yes, and all of you are from inept societies. So you will, at least in passing, know about the Darrakion. At least enough to know that it is a cursed place. The Darrakion is the site of a terrible, terrible mistake made by the Moths in the throes of their failing power. It is not a place that you wish to linger in or even look upon for too long. Even the apt in your camp, they just don't look north. They just find reasons to look down at the ground or over their shoulder, just on instinct. It's not a comfortable place. So, it's dinner time. It's a good time for you all to sort of hang out. You all have various things on your plate. Does anyone want to ask the others about things that are going on? Do they want to talk about something that's going on themselves or do something about something that's going on?
Sure. So, reclining his very long form in a bog chair with his legs extended outwards, he takes a look at Tavolo and fixes him with a querying look. He says, "Goodness, you look positively ghastly. You almost look like you've seen a ghost. Are you feeling all right?"
I look up, quite a long way up, at Lorca through under my beetling brows. And I say, "Sir Lorca, I am just fine. Bad dreams, that's all. It's probably the forest. Puts everyone on edge."
"Yes, I do hope that we don't have to linger any much longer near that horrible place."
The soldiers tip well, but I hope we're moving on soon.
Lorca, do you want to press any further? Maybe investigate yourself slightly?
Investigate Tavolo's demeanour?
Yes, yeah, it's like, you know, try to probe a little deeper, see if there is something magical to discern.
So Lorca has seen Tavolo in the basically the same sort of sunny, ready-to-go disposition for a while, but this is the first time that he's seen him looking quite shaken. So he is going to sort of peer at him and try and discern if he's lying.
Okay, so I think that's probably an empathy role, right?
Yes.
And Tavolo, are you like actively content? If, it sounds like you are, right? You're trying to put a brave face on this. You don't want...
I'm putting a brave face on how much this morning's dream shook me, but I'm not lying in that I... who am apt and completely incapable of recognizing ghosts, even if they're around, genuinely believe that I have just had a particularly bad dream this morning.
That's fair. Still, I think the fact that you're trying to like put a brave face on this means this is kind
honestly,
of...
if we weren't good enough friends already, I wouldn't even admit it to the bad dreams.
Yeah. In that case, Lorca, do you want to just make me a empathy roll and we'll kind of see where we get to?
Terrible. It's a minus two.
Okay. I believe that qualifies as poor.
Very poor.
Yeah, so I think at that point it's just... You actually, to be fair, you always have the choice when you try and overcome of just, like, succeeding as a heavy cost. But I feel like trying to work out how your mate's doing probably isn't the situation where you want to do that.
Yes, I think that if Lorca can not discern it at face value, he will just let it go.
That's fair. That's fine. That can just fester for a little bit. Anybody else have anything they're wanting to actively bring up?
I do. I will settle from futzing about with the fire back onto my bench and look at our butterfly friend and say, Sir Elegance, you know, if you're going to step on Candia's performance, you need to come on during the music. It'll look great as a pair, trust me. You'll break hearts for miles.
He sighs dramatically and snaps his fingers as he stops drumming. I know. I have to give it to her. She was enrapturing.
She was, but yeah. Two of you together would be heartbreaking.
Well, I'd talk to her about it, but she's ever said two words to me, so I'm not sure.
Well, that's not personal. She never says two words to anyone.
That's not true. I think I heard her say, go away, once.
That's exactly two words. I will give it to you.
That was a little bit vindictive of you, Elegant Scale. I didn't think you had it in you.
A bit, maybe. But perhaps our costumer could help me make it up to her. What do you think, Vess?
What do you want me to do?
Oh, make her something nice. You're so good with thread and all of that. I'd like to make it up to her, one showman to another.
I mean, I make her costume anyways. Why is that an apology from you?
I mean, they've got you there.
Yeah, no, they do. They absolutely do, yes. He flutters his eyelashes and sort of clutches his hands together at Vess and goes, yes, but see, this would be very nice, and I'll owe you one?
I suppose.
Oh, you're the best.
I know I am.
So later in the evening, Tivolo, what's your act?
I am a sharpshooter, and my act is a combination of, when it starts with target shooting, it starts with, there's a pollard, there's a bullseye target, and I have a crossbow, and I flit around on my art wings and shoot at things, and this is all very nice. But the centerpiece of it is that I have a co-performer, my friend the Mantis, who I don't think I've named. Do you have Mantis names handy?
How about Loriquai?
Sounds good. I have a co-performer, the Mantis Kinden Loriquai. She's not one of the semi-mythical weapons masters, but, like all mantids, she is skilled with the blade. Very skilled. When we're performing, I don't shoot to miss her. I shoot at her, and she is never there to be hit. Or her sword comes up and the bolt leaps aside. We both know, and the audience knows, that if either of us mess up, someone might die. And that's why it gets attention.
And as you are doing this most, as you are performing, you're a sideshow performer, right? This isn't usually a big top performance?
This is not part of the big top. This is attracting the crowd. And we'll do three or four bouts over the course of the day, depending on how many people we have to play to. And sometimes I'll get people to shoot at the targets to prove to themselves that there's no tricks involved. And we'll vary it up a bit.
So right now, it is probably the last show of the day before the big top performance. Mm-hmm. And it's autumn, so the days aren't long, right?
Until the dusk is coming down.
Yeah, you're doing this all by torchlight. Mm-hmm. Electric lanterns aren't really a thing. There isn't a huge amount of electricity in the setting. And, you know, oil lanterns and just plain burning torches are still the best way to get light at night.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, like, some nice, like, large, high torches set up, just, like, lighting your...
Our little ring, yeah.
Yeah, and God knows why some military rule, or perhaps they're finally getting to the point of having spent all their pay. There's not a lot of soldiers around. So you're mostly performing for crew who are off duty, or like kids of the crew. I mean, kids of the crew are still basically crew after a certain point.
Anyone who's big enough to load carts loads carts.
Well, exactly. So it's mostly Roachkinden, like, and, you know, maybe half as many again beetles, and then a scattering of other people hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the fight, and there is one of the roach kids has brought out a drum to underscore your finale.
Yeah, the drama and the tension.
Yeah, and you know, this is what it's for. This is what it's all about. You are coming alive, you are shooting, and you know when you're doing a good job, because when you come barreling out of the darkness, because you can only reload a crossbow so fast, right?
Mm.
So when you come out of the darkness and you fire, and Loroquai has to actually parry it, you hear that cling of metal, and you know that you've got a real good shot off, and your heart is pounding, and you come up to a high angle, and you can still see against the last, you know, blue rays of dawn, lighting it from the side. You can see that forest, and you come down, and you just hear something that you haven't heard for a while, at least not often. You don't hear a lot of Sodanese accents around, you know?
Mm.
You don't quite make out what they've said, and then you feel a sharp, ragged line of fire down your arm. The cut's not deep, but it shocks you out of your reverie.
Is it my own bolt sent back, or did I fly too close to her sword?
You flew too close. She has pulled back into a guard. She's not here to kill you. She's not here to finish you off if you stumble, you know. She will if she happens to, but that's what she's here for. She pulls back and waits for you to recover.
I do that. I sort of sweep back up into the air and hover over the edge of the circle and make a show of putting my crossbow into the other hand and, like, shaking out my injured arm.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're still performing.
The show must go on.
Exactly. And I give her the little signal we have that says this is going to be the last pass, and I'm going to do... It's our standard last pass. It's two shots in quick succession, one from in front and then one again from behind, and then I land.
Mm.
And as I'm doing that and pulling myself back together, I look around the circle for, you know, the audience, for anyone in Solanese clothing, any flies or soldier beetles I might recognise.
Hmm. Why don't you give me some sort of notice roll? Some sort of notice.
Yeah, that sounds like notice. My notice is mediocre.
Oh. Is that a plus zero?
It's a plus zero. So it's whatever I roll.
Do you have full on dark vision, or do you just have moderately good eyes in the dark?
I don't have art dark vision, so I just have moderately normal eyes. I do have one point in contacts, if that would be more appropriate.
No, I think this is more of a notice. You're trying to you know, see if you can see someone, right?
No, that's fair. Yeah. That is a big fat zero.
A big fat zero. I believe that's what? Poor? So, I assume you don't particularly want to succeed at terrible cost?
No, I am primarily concentrating on this fight, so it's more of a quick glance. I don't see anyone. I get back to the performance, which has 80% of my attention anyway.
Yeah. No, you don't see anyone. You've lost the rhythm now. You know, that was such a good run. You could have had a really nice finale there. But as it is, it kind of falls flat because you were striking so close and then your last two shots go nowhere.
Yeah, I chalk it up to luck of the draw and kind of make a mental note next time. Try to turn that into maybe a landing and a roll and then finish on that note, because actually blood being drawn was much more dramatic than the standard ending.
Hmm. On your way back to your trailer, though, you do notice just a flash of... It's got to be like cut and puffed everything, right?
No, it's a bit Middle Eastern. It's like the standard Solanese outfit is like loose white trousers and a white tunic, and then the flies in particular have very gaudy sashes and shit going on.
Oh shit, yeah.
So I'm not really wearing Solanese fashion. I'm wearing Lowlands fashion, just with loads of embroidery and a contrasting sash. But the Solanese look is like Sawakanese, but white.
Okay, yeah. So you like catch a flash of like white pajama that's like disappearing behind somebody's trailer as you're on your way, you know, to clean up, get ready to work the. Do you work the flies by any chance?
I do, in fact, work the flies during the big show.
God fucking damn it, I just worked it out. I was like, what's the word for working up top in a theatre? Wait a second.
Yeah, I spend the big show basically clinging to tent poles right up in the rafters, dropping things or pulling on ropes as appropriate.
Hmm.
But I'm going to follow that person. I'm going to let myself be distracted from going to bandage this cut, and instead I'm going to follow that person. I'll wad up a handkerchief and hold it to the cut so my clothes don't get too stained, and I'll follow.
It's not deep, but it certainly is bleeding. Let's cut. Elegant scale. I'm curious, what do you do outside of performances?
I think he likes to people watch a lot.
Hmm. Do you have like a vantage at all? A perch? I forget if you can fly. Oh, you can fly.
Yes, so yes, yeah. He would definitely have a perch or a vantage point that he likes to sit on. Something that's, you know, one of the tents that's going to be up for a long time. That's the last thing to be taken down.
Yeah. See, now I suspect that people who fly, there may just be like a kind of, you know, just like a kind of seat that you like that will clip nicely on
landing
the
landing area kind of thing.
Yeah. A nice sort of perch seat that you can, it's light enough, you can just pick it up with you.
Like one of those hanging wicker chairs.
Mm.
So you're perched there, you're watching the people go by. And this is, you know, it's a circus. There is a lot of noise, always. And it's kind of a mix between just the general noise of people going about their business and performing, people trying to shout to make their, like, pitches heard over the hubbub of the audience, and music.
Mm-hmm.
Either music played for the benefit of the punters or to underscore some acts, or just people playing music as they sit and rest off duty. And you can, and you always have, and there's always violins, because the Roach Kingdom, who make up most of the crew, are fairly fond of violins. But you can hear somehow cutting over all that noise, that sweet, sad, haunting melody, the one that makes the moon rise, the one that loses you in a reverie of wings and colour.
Is she performing, or is it...
And she's certainly not performing right now, but she does play it, you know. She keeps in practice. But it feels almost as if it is being played just for you. You can't see her, not straight away at least, but you can hear it as if you were just past the next tent, or if she was just sat right next to you playing. And it's melancholy and bittersweet. And you are being subjected to a magical attack.
Okay. What do I do about that? Or what can I do about that?
So because you are inept, you defend with magic. This is the defend action.
Okay.
Fortunately for you, you are a pretty good magician.
I am a pretty good magician.
So, go ahead and roll me magic.
Okay, so I got a 4, 2 threes, and a 1.
Right, so that's a minus 1 overall. It will definitely be easy for you to get like a fate roll or something. Mm-hmm. I have this ring which I haven't tracked down since we started, which is very annoying. It's a little spinner ring.
Yeah, you told us about that. That's all I need.
I want it. I need it. I genuinely do need it. It would be really handy.
Well, I thought you had it already.
No, I have it. I just don't know where it is now. So yeah, that is a total of... So that's minus 1. What's your magic skill?
Plus 4.
Okay, so that's still a great result. Right? That's still a good result, rather.
Mm.
So, since you are making a defend action, you get the benefits. I can tell you now that you beat her by... that you beat the attack by a long shot. Let me just find things. Okay, so because you succeeded with at least 2 shifts, so she only rolled minus 1. The person attacking you only rolled minus 1. Which means you gain a boost. A boost is a temporary aspect, which you can invoke once for free, then it goes away. So, for example, this could be reversed connection, right? You've got a magical hold on the person who tried to attack you, right? Or guard up, right? You are particularly, you know, well defended against magical attacks now. What would you like? You get to define it. What would you like the outcome to be of you doing particularly well at protecting yourself in this magic?
I'd definitely be on edge in case she tries again. So if I could give myself some kind of guard or shield.
Sure. Tell me what it's like though. Tell me what it's like when you defend yourself against magic. How do you conceive of it? How does that work for you?
I think he would think of it as sending it back, of rerouting the notes and bouncing them away from his mind. Sort of letting them flow over him instead of connect.
Okay. So you're parting the weave of the magic. Mm-hmm. And just sliding through it. Okay, I like that. So yeah, you're now that deep reverie, that mournful bitterness that was welling up in your heart, threatening to choke you, is gone. And the music sounds quieter now as well. It sounds like a violin playing some distance away in a noisy circus should sound, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do now?
I'd like to go and find one of my friends to help me investigate this. Going by myself seems not the best idea, perhaps. I'm not a fighter. If I can see anybody from up here, or if I know where they'd be at this time of day.
Vesperia is more stationary than most, and Lorca, I suppose, is up to you if you want to be somewhere to be spotted, or do either of you think you are likely to be findable?
I imagine Lorca is just sort of lounging around somewhere, enjoying the evening.
Okay, so yeah, you can go looking for Lorca.
I shall do that then. Sure. Or, Vez, are you going to say something?
Excuse me, I was just going to say I'm probably just in the tent checking in costumes at the end of the day, so I'm easily findable there.
Which you know, like it's before the performance, so like
oh,
well, like you're checking them out. But yeah.
Okay. Yes. I lost track of scenes.
Let's see. I wouldn't want to interrupt. I wouldn't want to interrupt while you're working, so I will instead go and find Lorca.
So yeah, you can find Lorca. Where are you, Lorca?
Lorca is in his dressing room, leaning back in a chair and obsessing over his appearance in a little hand mirror.
Of course you are. Actually, to be fair, do you come across as vain generally?
I think so. I think he comes across as not really vain, but obsessed with his outward appearance.
Hmm.
Elegant Scale will. Is there a door? Are you in a tent? What am I dealing with here? Can I knock on the door? Do you have one?
No, it would be a tent. The doors would not be very kind to most of us.
No, it wouldn't.
You can have doors. You can even have like latches on them. You just usually like you'll have a loop to hold them shut.
I think if he's got a door, it's just got a loop in it. So yeah, knock on the door.
All right, yeah. Elegant Scale will knock on the door and sort of not wait for an answer and come in anyways. And catch Lorca, perhaps. He would think of it as preening, even if it's more obsessive than that, and sort of hurry over and grab Lorca by the shoulder. You look as beautiful as ever, but I do need to pull you away and ask for your help.
Well, first of all, thank you, but what do you need my help with?
Well, remember that little spat of showmanship I had earlier?
Oh, yes, with the grasshopper.
Yes, she hasn't taken very kindly to it. Could you perhaps come and talk to her with me?
You want me to try and calm her down?
I think you'd be better suited to it than I would at this point.
Well, I can try. Take me to her.
All right.
Okay. So you move out following the... You know, it's not difficult or exceptionally time-critical to follow the sound of that violin still playing. When you find her, you run into Teyvolo at the same time. Meanwhile, again, cutting from the cut, Vesperia.
Yes.
Wallace is in your tent, collecting something for somebody else, and he seems distracted. He's pinching his fingers together, just like toying with some silk. Not silk like a piece of cloth. As he pulls his fingers apart, little bits of web glisten between his fingers. But if he's trying to talk to you in code, it's certainly not any kind of code you recognize.
Does it seem to have the structure of code for someone else?
No, not really. It really just seems like he's, you know, absentmindedly flexing his fingers as he thinks about something else. Oh, actually, no, better idea. Why don't you give me some sort of overcome roll with law? And I think this would, you'd need a good result here. So a plus 3 or better.
That's a plus 2.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure any of your aspects would necessarily help you here. But that's okay. So, you know, again, you have the option to succeed at a cost. I'm just going to remind you that the first few times, because it's the first, like, episode. And then I'll just kind of, like, take it as read, that you know that you can succeed at things at a cost. So, he has, you know, given you the whose costume he's running, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not even Like, he's looking at you and smiling, and he's not really present, right? Which is unusual, because he's usually very attentive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you are, like, you know, moving to assemble those costumes, he just raises a hand, sort of in, you know, sort of like a stop, sort of dismissive sort of gesture, and is like, you'll have to find another runner. And then he suddenly, like, takes off out of your tent, leaving you standing with, like, a costume, you know, draped over one arm.
I'm gonna follow him outside the tent.
I'm gonna assume that you have, like, an assistant or two, even if it's just, like, you know, one of the older kids who can be relied on to, you know, not put things in the wrong place, at least, most of the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do a bit of darning when you're overwhelmed.
Yeah, so then I will hand off the costume then, and then follow him out the tent.
He's still kind of doing that, probably just like a kind of nervous flex with his hand. And sort of looking around, you know, like when someone's lost someone in the crowd and they're sort of craning and like looking all around, you know? And sort of heading off decisively, heading vaguely north.
I'd like to continue following him. I'd like to try not to be noticed following him, though.
In that case, I think you are going to need to make me some sort of... I think there's a stealth skill. I think there's some kind of stealth.
Yeah, there is.
It's not a skill you have, but you can roll any skill. Except for it is a skill mechanics. That I... You can't roll mechanics. Sorry?
Stealth is a skill that I have. Yep.
Excuse me. Okay. So you're trying to... Yeah, this is like overcome, right? The obstacle is he might notice you.
Yeah.
Which means he's going to use his notice skill.
Okay. So that was just a zero, but I am a master of disguise, if that would help me blend into the crowd.
Okay. Right. So with that roll, he got a 3. So because you... So you can't... let me just check, actually, the rules on invokes. I think you're only allowed to spend one fate point on an invocation.
Okay. So, I am not very stealthy at the moment.
I think you could, however, spend a fate... invoke your... what was it? Master of Disguise? Is that right? Yeah. You can certainly invoke your Master of Disguise to buy a reroll instead.
Yeah, I will do that. Oh my god.
No better?
Now I rolled a -3.
No. Well, fortunately, because he isn't actually using the defend action, he doesn't get like any boosts on you. So he has the aspect in over his head. I would like to offer to you, O players, I would like to compel that aspect to say that he's going to kind of like, I think because he's in over his head, he might kind of take the opportunity to kind of like fall back, let you catch up with him, and kind of like go, you know what, I'd rather have this known quantity with me, right?
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for me getting a fate point, which is exciting. Are you all right with that, players? Is that acceptable?
Sounds good.
Hell yeah.
Does that like come out of one of our specific pools, or is it just a general?
No, because I'm kind of raising it. I don't know if this is how it works, but I'm raising it. I'm asking if I get compelled. I think it's
Go for it.
If you want to actively compel one of my characters' aspects, you do have to pay out of your pool.
That's what I thought.
One of each other's aspects, but since I'm kind of raising it myself. Which I don't know if I'm technically allowed to do. Oh, I've got a lot of favourites to pay with that. So yeah, he kind of notices you and just sort of falls back, lets you catch up. There's, on second thoughts, maybe you should join me. He kind of like rubs his chin and says, "You wouldn't happen to be a secret master manipulus or weapons master, would you?"
No, unfortunately not.
You any good in a fight? I don't know how this is about to go.
Not really.
Oh, that's fine. Neither am I. Let's just try and be a little bit more subtle.
Is there anything I should know about what is about to happen?
There is a brief kind of like, you know, that kind of like pained look of someone who is caught between a rock and a hard place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that is kind of like painted over by the dance mask, and he says, well, I don't know as much as I'd like to myself yet. I'm just hunting down a very vague sort of prophecy," he says, sort of shrugging.
Prophecy.
Don't ask me, it isn't mine. I'm just the messenger / scout. Anyway, I can't make you come with me, but aren't you curious?
How dangerous is it? Should we bring more people?
He spreads his hands and says, "I've got the trail now, and it doesn't come up always. And I don't know. It could be completely safe. I just don't know. Sorry, not that good."
All right. Let's go.
The Wasp Arena is set up on the southern edge of their encampment, just inside their palisade walls. And logically, your circus has been set up adjacent, outside the palisade walls.
Certainly.
But your camp, all spread out, people's living quarters and the actual performance areas aside, combined, sprawls out far enough that it goes, that to the west it goes past the edges of their palisade.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike them, you are not crammed together in dormitories, sleeping one on top of the other, or indeed holed up in a pen, sleeping one on top of the other, but that's another story. And so out at the western edge of camp, there is a nice clear view out onto the forest. Most people have set up their campfire so they don't have to look out that way. And standing there out on the grassy hills is Tivola, you have been following this snatch of white through the camp. And you've spilled out from the sideshows into the living areas and then out onto the edge, just missing this person over just and over again.
Getting glimpses of cloth and idea of a figure, and they're always round the next corner.
And when you finally get out past the whole camp, outside of the nice ring of the backs of wagons and tents, when you look out onto that wide rolling meadowland, you can see him. You don't have good eyes for the dark, and you've just been, you know, pushing through
campfires and torches.
But you can see two figures standing there out on the brow of the hill, facing north as a sad and haunting melody plays. Elephant Scale and Lorca, you necessarily arrive on foot, since Lorca can't, to the best of my knowledge, fly. And you see Tivolo. Tivolo, are you still moving towards these two figures?
Yes, I think before I make a call on that, do they look, or do either of them look familiar? I would know. We were together for 15 years. Do I know this person?
I'll tell you what. No. The person, you can hear the music. You know that's got to be Candeo. It could not be anybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other figure, they're too far away. You'd have to get closer.
Then I'm getting closer.
He's, of course, yeah. Much further away than he was last time he rounded a corner, but...
Yeah. I am trying to get closer. I'm probably a little out of breath because I've been hurrying through the camp and I've only got short little legs.
Yeah. I think you definitely get a fate point for a compel, either from narrative imperative or from blood on my hands. I mean, either way, really.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with this is narrative imperative because I don't know who this is. It could be him. It could be not. But when someone from home turns up in the middle of a show, I have to find out.
Yeah, because of course, because of the narrative imperative, of course you have to step out far beyond the limits of the campsite in the direction that nobody wants to look at.
Of course, I have to go out into the meadow outside the spooky forest and find out who and what this is.
If that's not a compel, I don't know what is. Yeah, you see, you're out of breath now, right? So would it be fair to say that you're like stumbling slightly?
Yeah, and it's meadowland and it's at best dusk, shading toward dark. I can't really see where I'm putting my feet.
Taking little hops on your wings.
Yeah.
And then realizing that it's still slightly less tiring to walk.
Yeah, it's not that much faster. Like the advantage of flight is the verticality rather than the speed.
Hmm.
For me, you know, I'm not the strongest flyer in the world.
So that's what you kind of emerge onto as you kind of burst out of the ring of, you know, people have circled up their tents and they've, you know, something like, you know, they'll string, there's the guy ropes that are kind of like webbed together, or people maybe string little ropes up between to make sure people don't just like stumble into their like
home. But if any sort of little fence, I can just hop it.
Oh, yeah. So what I'm saying is, Lorcan and Elegant Scale, when you kind of make it out past the wall of like fabric, you see two figures kind of stood on the brow of the hill, now kind of catching really the very last of the sunlight on their sides. And you see much closer to you a small and familiar fly.
I am hurrying towards these two figures with this expression of slightly hypnotized dread.
Lorca will glance Elegant Scale and look towards Tavolo and trudge towards him, easily catching up on his long legs. He says, "What are you doing here?"
"Finding out who that is."
"Elegant Scale told me to come and help him talk to this figure. Scale, do you know the other person with them?"
"Do I recognize the other person with them?"
"So I feel like that's prompted you to take a good look at them, right? Is that fair?"
Yeah.
You can try, this is the thing, you're both kind of trying to get a good look at this, like, other person, right? Because one person is obvious, they're a violinist, they're playing grasshopper music, like... And they're a virtuoso.
Not a huge amount of history with Candy.
You're kind of you've both been prompted to take a look at this person. Do you want to give me a notice roll? And I think it's you'd need to do fair. And what I'm going to ask is, whichever you is strongest at notice, just take a +1. Assuming the other person has it as a skill at all, because that's the teamwork mechanic.
That is +3.
And what have you got it as?
I've got it +2.
Okay, so do you want to take it as a notice 4?
Okay, so then add that +4, so that's just +4?
Yeah, that's fine. You succeed with style, actually.
Oh, good. I don't know if that helps me in this case, but all right, I'll take it.
Oh, sorry, no, you need to roll at least 3 higher to succeed with style. I got that wrong. My mistake. Okay. Yeah, you two kind of like look at this figure, and there's something definitely wrong with it. It's not really a person. It's the impression of a person, you know? There isn't anything actually there. It's just some sort of manifestation, you know? Anyway, Vesperia, so you and your good friend... you and your good friend have Hollis. Similarly come out, but being sensible people, you have not immediately run up to announce your presence to everybody. What would you like to do? You can now see three people advancing towards two people. And no, sorry, actually no, you can see three people advancing towards Candeia playing her violin alone on the hill.
And I don't recognize my friends.
Oh yeah, you can tell who it is. Like honestly, okay. Like Lorca in particular is a particularly striking figure.
Yeah. What on earth are they doing here?
I don't know, but I'm a bit more concerned with what she's doing here. What do you think? I'd like to get a closer look.
Yeah.
He kind of kicks at the grass dubiously. It's about like, you know, knee high. I don't really fancy crawling in my belly for all of this.
Don't really have a solution to that.
You kind of like tists.
I'm trying to figure out, like, how to what to do and how to do it. I mean, we should get closer.
You kind of like sighs and says, "All right, let's try and just sort of keep low and hope they don't look back." And he gestures for you to move with him. Yeah, do you want to make some sort of stealth roll?
Yeah.
I think probably this is just passive opposition because, like, the rest of you aren't, like, looking for things behind you, right?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I think you'd have to do, like, good, right? Like, a plus three. You'd need to be good at stealth to, like, sneak out across open grassland without, you know, drawing attention.
Yeah, that was just a one.
So I think, yeah, I think at that point probably what happens is, like, you know, like, you do your best, but there's not so much you can do. You probably don't know in character if you've been spotted yet by anyone.
I imagine full skirts are not great for sneaking through large.
Yeah, you're not wearing your sneaking gear.
That's it. That's why I'm not sneaky. That's the reason.
And the remaining three, you can hear somebody coming up behind you. Or actually, yeah, well, the two of you who are slightly more in command of yourselves can hear it.
Lorca turns behind him and spots Vess with the strange person.
Yeah. Oh, you've met, like, Hollis. Have you mentioned Hollis before, to be honest?
Yes.
So yeah, like, you know that they're not, presumably they know that you're not exactly thick as thieves, generally.
Mm-hmm. Lorca sort of does that sort of loud whisper. Well, that's not quite quiet, but it's still a hoarse whisper. It says, "Not you too. What is this? What are we all after?"
Yeah, Hollis just stands fully up, like, well, fuck it, stealth has failed.
Vess shrugs. In a sort of, well, this is the situation, I guess. How close are we to the grasshopper at this point?
Yeah, you're not far now. Like, they were, like, you know, far enough away to not be able to really make them out as individuals. Like, when you were at the edge of the camp, so I guess that'd be, what, like, a couple hundred meters?
Okay.
Like, that's a person shape, but I'm not exactly sure who. Maybe if I squint and the light was better.
And unless anyone is actually stopping him, Tavolo is just ploughing ahead.
Yep.
I think Elegant Scale will at least try and, like, grab his shoulder in a slow down there kind of motion.
He will glare at you deeply ungraciously and kind of try to shrug out of your hold because whatever, you're all tagging along for some reason.
That's not a person. Not a real person.
What? It's someone from home. I just want to know who.
No, it's not. I don't know what she did exactly, but that's not a person.
I give you this deeply confused, dubious look. That's a really weird lie to tell, so...
So you can tell it's not a lie.
That is a person in Solani's clothing. I'm curious who they are. Go and say hi to someone from home.
Escale called me here because she'd had some altercation with Candea and wanted me to help him talk it out. I don't know who this other person is.
Tried to attack me with her magic, and I don't know if this is part of that. I suspect
what?
It is.
You didn't say it was magic.
Yes, well, I don't know what she was aiming for precisely, but it couldn't have been anything good. And the fact that this is connected and you're here, I don't know. I mean, likely she knows we're friends, but I don't know what she'd want.
Hollis was acting suspiciously, so I followed him. He said something about a prophecy.
Yes, well, prophecy is just a very fancy word for hunch and not enough information. Look, I don't think we're exactly being subtle here. We may as well, you know, close. He says, because you're about, 100 meters away at this point.
Are ghosts are they seen as evil or good or controlled?
Interesting question.
What?
It's very variable. You're actually a very skilled magician. So I think you'd have a very nuanced understanding of ghosts. Certainly ghosts are potentially dangerous because they're just like, the real danger in a ghost is mistaking it for the person, right? Ghosts just aren't as complicated as people, you know? You can have a noble duelist die in a tragic last stand, and their ghost can just be a red-handed killer, because there isn't room for all that nuance in a ghost.
They're flat.
Yeah. They're like, ghosts are a lot like memories, you know? They're images of a person. They're not the whole thing, and, well, unchaining part of a person can be a dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, what if he leaves? What if while you're stood here talking, he leaves and you don't even get to know?
Lorca is going to attempt to take a closer look and get very close.
Elegant is just keeping pace with Tevolo at this point.
So, Lorca and Elegant Scale, as you're getting closer, you can tell, you're getting just, the impression of a person, right? Without, working at it, that's all you're getting. It's just, a kind of, a shape, right? If you caught them out of the corner of your eye, you'd say there's someone there staring right at them. You can kind of again, because you are magicians, you can kind of still get that vague impression of a person, or you can kind of just look right through them, depending on how you focus. Tevolo, you can feel your body thrilling to that music, and you can tell, now that you're closer, you just know it's him. You couldn't actually look right at him and pick out all the details of him. But when you look away, you can remember that of course it was him. You know what I mean? If you didn't know this person, if you didn't already know intimately every curve of his body, every angle of his face, you wouldn't actually be able to describe him, but you'd still think you could. You got an impression of him. And he is so close that you could just take one quick flight and embrace him.
My face has gone as pale as my face can go. I can feel my pulse through the cut on my arm that I'm still clutching a handkerchief to. I don't take one quick flight. I lift up vertically so that my feet are above the obstruction of the long grass, and I fly forward, and I stop just out of arm's reach and wait for him to look at me.
You feel the world slipping away from you. You feel the whole world recede as he looks at you. And there is so much hurt and betrayal in his voice when he says, "You left me."
You died.
You have been listening to Banjax's unbelievable Gear Chain Circus. Your performers were Ben as Salvatore Volo, Moss as Vesperi of Tassano, Chris as Elegant Scales, and Haz as Lotka the Disapparist. Narration, editing, and composition was provided by me, Mel, and the setting is used by kind permission of Adrian Tarkovsky, whose writing can be found wherever books are sold.
And that's the end of the episode! Because I'm the worst person in the world!